This is episode number 58 with Susie Batisse. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Hello, beautiful people. Welcome back to the Rise Higher podcast. And thank you so much for spending some of your time with me today. I know you guys are going to love today's episode with the incredible Susie Batisse. Now, before we hop into the show today, I wanted to let you guys know that I am launching my 90-day live coaching mastermind for high achievers and entrepreneurs called Become. So if you're a high achiever or an entrepreneur who's been feeling stuck, you've been struggling with self-doubt and playing small or hiding out, and you're ready to up-level your success, then this mastermind is for you. Because inside this mastermind, I help you to uncover, reprogram, and upgrade your subconscious beliefs so you can get unstuck, crush self-doubt, and feel confident so that you can increase your impact and make more money. Now, this mastermind is designed to break through your biggest blocks that have been holding you back and to turn you into a powerful money-making force for good. So if you want more details or to apply, you can go to stephaniekwong.com/mastermind to get all the info that you need. Now, this starts on Monday, September 16th. And for those who hop into the program before September 1st, you're going to get a big old special bonus from me. So go to stephaniekwong.com/mastermind. And if this is the right fit, I would love to support you even deeper to upgrade your beliefs, create an abundance mindset, and to take massive action that makes an impact in your work and on your bottom line. All right, so for today, get ready for some big magic with Susie Batisse. Now, Susie is the inventor, founder, and CEO of Poopery, the cult favorite all-natural before-you-go toilet spray, which I've got a bottle right above my toilet. And she's also the genius behind Supernatural, which is a new line of game-changing natural household cleaning products. Now, Susie is a serial creator and an expert in entrepreneurial intuition, and she's built an empire by tackling taboo topics and shaping culture by challenging societal norms. Now, Susie wasn't always the successful and fulfilled woman that she is today. And what you guys are going to hear in today's episode is her powerful story of how she rose up from some of life's lowest lows to build a $500 million empire and creating a super successful business and a deeply fulfilling life. And so Susie shares her journey from having a dysfunctional family, living in poverty, experiencing sexual and domestic abuse, having depression, a suicide attempt, and two bankruptcies, to embarking on a spiritual sabbatical where she transformed herself and she developed her own internal happiness and abundance. And you guys, it's so incredible to see how Susie now lives life on her terms. She follows and does what makes her come alive, and she inspires and empowers others to do the same. So, in this episode, you guys are also going to hear why it's so important to value your energy and emotions, how to grow within yourself and reach your highest evolution, why you should always ground yourself in reality, how to move through incredibly difficult challenges with grace, why you must commit to transformation to have ultimate success, the importance of allowing yourself to feel everything deeply, why you should do what fulfills your soul, how to find happiness despite any struggle, and of course, y'all know a heck of a lot more. So you're in for one hell of a story today. Susie is full of amazing insights, and she's a true inspiration and a testament to what's possible when you dig in deep into the crevices of your soul to heal, rise up, and to follow what has you come alive. You guys are definitely going to want to share this podcast out with your friends and family. I cannot wait to hear what you think of this episode. Go ahead and take a screenshot of the podcast that you're listening to right now. Share it out and tag me on Instagram at I am Stephanie Kwong so that I can shout you back. Okay, you guys, here we go with the magical and super badass Susie Batiste. All right, we've got the amazing Susie Batiste in the house for the Rise Higher podcast. Thank you, Susie, for being here today.
Oh, you're so welcome. So fun. Thank you for having me on.
You are somebody, I shared this right before we started rolling, but I've been so inspired by you, by your journey, what you've created, and how you create. And I'm really excited to share that with everybody listening today, because you are a true inspiration of somebody who was dealt some cards when you were growing up, but how you've really transformed and risen up and using a platform for yourself to motivate and inspire is so absolutely incredible. And I know one of your goals is to reach your highest evolution, to just keep growing, to keep evolving, whatever the struggle, as long as you're learning and growing. Yes. And now you're pretty much like a spiritual guide, and you're an extraordinarily impactful role model for not just women, but I would just say people across the world to become alive and grow within themselves and to take on those ideas. But you didn't always start off like that. So I'd love for you to take us back to how life started for you and then how you ended up to where you are now, because it's such an extraordinary journey.
Yeah, it's been an amazing journey. I told someone the other day, I said, holy shit, right? It's like, that should be the title of my life. Like, holy shit. So I grew up in Arkansas. You know what we would probably call poor. You know, we weren't, I think in today's days, you would probably look at us and be like, yeah, they're pretty poor. The wonderful thing about that is that I learned to make everything myself, which I believe created me being a maker. But I grew up poor. I grew up in a small town in Arkansas. My parents were pretty dysfunctional, you know, bipolar, alcoholic dad. My mom was depressed most of her life, addicted to pain pills. They divorced when I was 10, molested by my stepfather, left the house. I was married, bankrupt, and divorced by the time I was 20 years old. Tried to kill myself when I was 21. I was pregnant and in an abusive marriage at 23. Had two children, escaped that marriage, got married to my third husband. And, you know, just really tried to survive, you know, hanging on with my fingernails through life. And my second bankruptcy occurred when I was 38 years old. So that was the moment when I pretty much just gave up and said, okay, I'm done. I knew I wasn't going to kill myself again because I had children and a family, but I was pretty done. So I kind of just had one of those moments where you get on your knees and you look up at God, even though you turned your back on him for years, and you just kind of go, like, I'm done. You need to do something here. So a couple days later, I had Byron Katie's book, Loving What Is, in my hands, and went to her two-week workshop, and my life radically changed. I was happy for the first time in my life, sitting at home crying in bliss, listening to Gangaji, going, oh, my God, I don't need anything. I am happy. And what happened with that was then the idea for Poopery came, you know, of course, because I wasn't interested in money. I didn't want to go back in business. I had everything that I wanted, which was very little, but it didn't matter. I was happy inside myself. And then, of course, ironically, you know, you come up with a big idea and that started this journey.
Yeah. Wow. So going back, I know... Actually, quite a few people have referenced Byron Katie as well. Her work has been extraordinarily impactful for me too, just so simple yet so powerful, her process. How did that shift for you? Because I know for some of the listeners, some of them are familiar with Byron Katie and some aren't. But how did her work directly impact you and create that freedom?
Yeah, well, really the first book was Man's Search for Meaning. A hypnotist had given that to me. And that sort of opened me up to like, hold on, maybe there's something more here. And then what happened with Loving What Is and Byron Katie is I took responsibility. So I know this is gets to be a touchy subject with people, but we're,
let's dive in.
Yeah, but for example, let's take my molestation, you know. Yes, I was molested. Yes, you know, this does not condone or make my stepfather alleviate him of any wrongdoing. But what I realized when going back and really looking at those scenarios, like I never said no, right? I never spoke up and showed my voice. And you can argue with that going, oh, you're only 12 years old, you're programmed, you're innocent, you're vulnerable. All of that's true. But that little sliver of accountability within myself suddenly started making me free rather than being a victim. There's no power in being a victim that I found. The power is when I can say, wow, I created this, or I had a choice, and that's brought me power. For example, my abusive marriage, you know, I remember Byron Katie saying, well, you know, okay, so he hit you. Yeah. Then he hit you again and then again. She goes, yeah. She said, well, if you put your hand in a cage with a lion and it bit you, you know, would you keep sticking your hand in that cage? So at some point, what I started realizing within myself is, why did I do that to myself? Mm-hmm. I knew he was an abuser. Mm-hmm. The question is not whether he abused me. He did. But the bigger question is why would I allow that to happen? And why would I do that to myself? So really some radical concepts here. And somehow when I started exploring things from these perspectives, I started gaining power back, you know, where I felt like I was tumbling through life and it's like, oh my God, this keeps happening to me. You know, this victim mentality, like, and trust me, I have all the stories to prove the victim mentality, right? Like I could have the biggest woe is me moment and it would be very valid based on what we see. But what I found is I was only getting more sad and more depressed when I started claiming my part. That's when I started noticing some freedom. So that's what I do all the time now. You know, like if I have a conflict right now, I'm having a conflict with like some, you know, internal, like a, you know, someone in my life. And it's like, I have to look at, wow, how am I creating this? What belief system that did I have that I would, you know, even get myself into this situation? So I really look at things from the inside out.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm completely on board with exactly what you just shared. I do the same. And it's not like I might have my moment where I get upset and might have that victim moment of like, they shouldn't have. And I'm like, whoa, 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 wait. How did I participate in this? How did I create that? And if I want this to shift, what can I do to cause the result I want versus hoping, praying, wishing that something's going to change when that's not what's going to create it? So I love that personal responsibility. And it's hard for people. Because I think sometimes it's easier to be the victim, right?
Yeah, it's way easier. But in my experience, I don't ever feel fulfilled. You know, for example, you know, I had a couple woe is me nights this week, and I don't usually do that, but this situation's pretty intense. And I was just like, oh, why is this? And it wasn't in the shadow for me. I was very cognizant, like I'm being a whiny hiney, you know, like I knew that's what I told my friends. I'm like, I'm being a whiny hiney. So it's not in the shadow for me. It's not a behavior that I see that I'm not aware of, you know, it's like, I see I'm doing it. And it's like, okay, let me just be whiny for a moment. But what I realize, it's only fulfilling for me for so long. And then it's like, I'm just don't want that drama or that energy in my life. So when I can start finding some of my accountability, like I said, it doesn't dismiss the other person from any wrongdoing. I just don't become the judge anymore. And I'm like, whatever, let the universe take care of you. I'm going to be over here taking care of me.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. So I know that there, and I want to highlight this part of your life because this is something that I see a lot of people struggling with. But when you went through your first bankruptcy and leading up to your second, you made a decision for yourself how what was going to be guiding you in life, which then turned out to be the thing that was totally off. And it was around the what you were doing your work for. And it wasn't for you, it was for some other reason. Can you share about that and then how that shifted for you?
So what happened was I really thought money was my way out. It was my ticket, you know? So if I could just make enough money, then I was going to be successful. And then I was going to be somebody and be worthy. I was finally going to be worthy and be fulfilled. And all of those dreams that I thought money was the holy grail. So I've just got to work and I've just got to make more and more and more and more and more, right? And no matter, the funny thing is, no matter how much I made, it just kept moving and inching along. And I also wasn't that successful. I love ideas. I have so many ideas. You know, I've had several new product and company ideas every day. But what would happen is I would just chase all of those ideas. I didn't particularly wait for one that really turned me on. I didn't realize that I was a creative and that's just what I do. My brain just works in this creative. You should do this and you should do that. So I was running around following all these ideas like, you know, there were squirrels. And and all I wanted to do was make a little bit of money. Like, I just need to make a little bit of money to survive, make a little bit of money. Because if I can just kind of get above this hump. And then what I did with that is I sold out, I compromised, I pushed through. You know, I mean, some of the things I think about are just like not cool. Like, you know, that guy thinks you're cute, but you ignore it. And he's probably being a little too pushy, but I'm going to go ahead and go to lunch with him anyway, because I'll probably close the deal. You know what I'm saying? Like all those moves that just now seem so slimy in my being, I did those. You know? And what happened is when I filed my second bankruptcy, what I often say is what's worse than losing everything is losing everything and then realizing you didn't even have a good time and what you did. It's like, right?
Yeah, at least you could have, if it didn't work out, have some fun with it, right?
Yeah. So after that, I was like, you know what? I'm going to focus on, well, you know, I went and then just became happy within myself and found happiness the first time in my life. But then when the idea for Poopery came and it was so alive in my body and I started following it, I knew I was not going to do anything that didn't feel good, because I know at any moment it can all be taken away. And I at least want to be able to lay my head down at night, have a clear conscience, and had a good time doing it. And growing as a person.
And doing what fulfills your soul, not what is for other people or for any external gain, is what I'm hearing you say. Because so often I think it's like, when I do this and I have that, then I'll be happy. Instead of, let me be happy now, find what lights me up, and then share that energy with the world and give that gift off first. So, in that time, because I know what my listeners, what they really love to hear is like, how did you move through the challenges? And so I know when at 38 in your second bankruptcy, I believe there was you had invested your money right into
a .com.
Into tech, .com, and then it failed. What was that like for you when that happened?
It was horrible. Like, what's interesting is, like, I'll never forget the sound of the tow truck when it was pulled, like the winch of that tow truck. Like, it still is in my body of just, like, that sound was such a pivotal moment for me, because I always had hope that I could pull it out. Right? Pull it off. Like, everything's really not crashing the way it seems to be crashing. Like, some miracle's going to come and save me. Right? And that moment when the tow truck, it was that moment I'll never forget. I was sitting in my kitchen. I had my robe on and I heard it, and everything in my body just dropped. And it was like, holy shit, like, this is really, really happening. You know, so that was my first kind of face of reality. So I have a lot of people that email me and say, I'm about to file bankruptcy. What do I do? And I said, first of all, you need to face reality. like this is happening. You know, my mentor had told me when I first met him a few years ago that I was addicted to hope. And I was like, well, hope is good. And he's like, yeah, hope's not good when you don't look at reality, right? So back then, I was always chasing and had this hope that things are going to work out. I wasn't looking at really my finances and going, I'm screwed. I better go ahead and move out of my house, go and try to sell my house. I had hope that I was something was going to come through and I was going to pull myself out, right? So The first thing that helped and is the hardest thing to do is really face reality. You know, I'm an optimist. I'm a visionary. I'm an idealist. So for me, hope is just a natural drug of choice, right? It's like I often, it is. That's my drug. I can see someone acting crazy and I can see that little piece of potential in them, right? Mm. And I have a tendency to focus on that and ignore. So my name's Susie Batiz and I'm a hope addict. I'm a recovering hope addict. I think really facing reality, going, okay, this is literally the situation. You know, let's take all the hope out the window. If I had to just deal with what I had right now and nothing else happened, what would that look like? And my experience is we avoid that. Most women or most people avoid finances, right? I try to do that. It's like, I don't want to look at it, even though they're good. It's like, oh, like...
Yeah, no, I did that for a while too, and that was not helpful.
No, but it's what we do, right? It's like, you know, even with boyfriend or relationship issues, you know, I'm just like, oh, well, I hope it'll work out. You know, it's like, I believe it's a society. We pump hope as that dream. So you do have to have the dream, but the dream needs to be based in reality as well. Mm-hmm. Can I actually pull this off? Can this actually happen? You know, where am I actually at? So that was one of the first things I did was really face reality. And it sucks. I mean, you're talking about a lot of anger, sadness, grief. Like I had to process.
And how did you process that?
Oh, I put on a headset. Back then it was like a Walkman, right? And I just played Disturbed. It's this really angry, heavy metal, like, bah, 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 bah. And I was just painting my walls. I was like, bah. Like I was just raging, you know? So I let myself, now I study body intelligence and practice body intelligence, but I just let myself rage. So I raged for a couple months and cried and just felt. I literally felt what was happening. All those feelings I'd avoided, I felt.
For all those years.
All those years. So it's built up.
Yeah. I went through my own sacred anger practices for a while too, because being a good Asian girl, we don't show anger. We don't show anything but strength and joy.
Exactly.
And you're like, but I feel some other things and that energy needs to come out. Yes. And how am I going to release it? And it's just, you got to find your way. So I love that you really just allowed yourself to feel, because that's what creates the disease in our body too, that people don't see when we're not emoting and expressing and feeling the whole range that's coming up for us of emotions.
So my office has these windows all around, so it's like I'm in a fishbowl. So when people come by, they're like, my head. I wanted to show you. This is an original calligraphy of Thich Nhat Hanh.
Thich Nhat Hanh's
calligraphy. Yeah. Isn't that great?
That is so special.
It's cool. Like hands in it, so you can't really see it, but anyway.
Yeah. And it actually looks like a Mother Mary. You know what? She has
Look at
that, right? It's perfect. I love it. So you allowed yourself to feel the anger. What else pulled you through in that time?
Well, really just feeling and just letting myself, I'd avoided being depressed. You know, I had a history of depression back then. And really my mentors say depression is sadness and anger that's not been felt. So I was terrified I was going to be depressed. But so instead of just curling up, I'm like, I'm going to face this. Because honestly, I was ready to go. I was ready to get out of this world. I'd really just been exhausted. So I just felt, and I went to a hypnotist and I told him, you know, I was basically in a big issue, big problem. And he said, you have no meaning in your life. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he gave me the book, Man's Search for Meaning. And that, again, like I said earlier, kind of opened the concept of maybe I have been focused on the wrong things. Okay. I wouldn't say it was like a total enlightenment moment, but it was like a, huh? You know, like he could be right here. And what if he is? So I really started at that point kind of studying religions, everything, but I still was just so, I had given up so much power in my life. I was super into astrology and numerology. I wouldn't make a phone call unless the numerology's right. I was into feng shui to the point where I'd move my bed every month. Like I was terrified in my life. I mean, complete insanity, right? And, but that's what can happen. Oh, let me pull a card to see what to do. It's ridiculous. I believe any of those things can become addictive and can overpower. Not that they're not great tools. It's just that we can always become imbalanced. So I was definitely imbalanced. And finally, one day I went into this room that my feng shui person said, you cannot go in this room. It's death and destruction for you. And I went in there. I mean, it sounds so dramatic. It's ridiculous. And I just really just screamed at God. And I just said, you know what? I'm done. I'm like, you've got to kill me. You know, supposedly this house I lived in was going to, you know, death and destruction to me. I was like, what does that mean? Am I going to get killed? Am I going to have some weird disease, you know, horrible disease and die? So I was just ready to go. And then, you know, of course, Loving What Is came in my hands. But it's all such a process. But when I look back, the biggest process was truly feeling where I was and being honest about that. You know, how many times do we get programmed? It's okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. You know, like you broke up with me, but I'll be fine. I'll be fine. All your friends are like, you'll be fine. You're great. You're a beautiful girl. Like you go. You don't sit and just cry and eat the ice cream, you know, if you need to, like watch the sad movies. Yeah.
Ice cream eater.
I went through a divorce about, you know, 3 years ago, and I just let myself cry and listen to old country music. I knew when things started to shift, when I woke up one morning and didn't listen to old sad country music and Adele, right? I was like, oh, maybe, but it was such a good mood match, you know? It's like, oh, yeah. Drink the whiskey. Just cry. But I let myself truly feel the sadness, feel the grief, get brought to my knees, you know, curled up on the floor. And I just don't think we do that enough. And then once I did that, like it's gone. So once it's almost like you neutralize that what happens is you have a pipeline, and if it's full of sadness and unfelt grief and anger that you've not felt, like your potential for happiness is this big, right? Because it's like being constipated. It can't get through. You see, so what happens is when you can feel it, like literally it's a purge, like taking a big poop or something, you know, it really is. And
it
what
really
that does is it opens that pipe up where then it can be filled with those same amounts of joy and love and abundance and all the yumminess that we want, but we can't do that without feeling, in my experience.
Totally. No, I 100% aligned. And I really, if you can just see for me what allowed me to start feeling as well, is just seeing these emotions as energy. Yeah. It's not bad if you just let feel energy, let it move through you. So like you said, it doesn't clog it anymore. Yeah. And I remember Brené Brown or somebody saying that you can't just numb one feeling. If you numb, you actually also numb your ability to feel joy and happiness at a higher level, because when you're suppressing the emotions down, it kind of goes across the board. And so in order for us to also experience higher extremes of love and joy and ecstasy and all of that bliss, that we have to let ourselves feel all the full range of everything.
Yeah. Yes, and we're so programmed. It's really just programming, outdated programming and conditioning. Old programming, you know, suck it up. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. You know, you see a kid that falls down and scratches his knee. And what happens? The parents, you're fine. Here, put a Band-Aid on it. Yeah. You know, when they could just cry full out and then be done with it. You know, it's like, okay, I got to express, you know?
Yeah. You know, something I watched one of my brother's friends do with his kid, he fell and his kid starts just like bawling and screaming. And my brother's friend went up to his son and said, hey, buddy, he's like, are you crying because you're scared? Like that was a shock. Or are you crying because it hurts?
Oh, yeah.
And he got to actually like check in with himself too, even as a young kid, like, what is this emotion that I'm feeling? Oh, I'm just shocked right now. Or, ouch, this really hurts and I need to like scream about this. And I think that was kind of, I actually took that for myself and I go, huh, what if I checked in and went, okay, what's creating this feeling? Is it because really it hurts and I got to let it release and let it out? Or is it really just, I just feel shocked? Or it's just fear that's coming up, and to know how to best be with the emotion as it comes up. So, yeah. I know that your son went through some tough stuff as well. He went through a time of depression. Yeah. And there you actually sent him to Peru to do ayahuasca. Yeah. Can you share about that? Because that's also been a powerful medicine for me. So I'd love to hear your journey with
that. So I had been in Byron Katie's camp for a while. I'd started I say camp in that I was kind of an apprentice or whatever you call them back then. I don't remember. You go and assist. And I'd been doing that for a few years. So I was well into my spiritual path. I'd started Poo-Pourri, but my older son, he was 19 and he was really depressed. He was kind of goth, you know, kind of F God, you know, there is no God. Everything was dark. And I really had thought, I'm not going to have this kid for long. So I'm just going to really, you know, love him and just get the most out of the time I have with him. And I wake up one morning and I hear this profound voice that says ayahuasca and Dustin. And I was like, I don't even know what that is, right? Like, what does this mean? So I went to work and I tried to type it. A-W-A. I'm like, ayahuasca. Somehow I find this National Geographic article called To Hell and Back. I think it was one of the top 10 National Geographic articles of all times. And it was about this woman who had gone down to Peru and drank ayahuasca, and she had like severe depression, and it helped alleviate her depression. So I sent it to my son on Wednesday. He was down there on Saturday morning. 10 days later, you know, in the jungle, no Wi-Fi, no cell phone, no contact. People said, why would you send your 19-year-old down to the jungles of Peru? And I said, you didn't hear that voice. Okay. If you had heard that, you would have done it too. Like, that's what Noah did when he built the ark, right? I mean, it's like,
you're not going to go, is that safe? No, build it. Send him.
Yeah. It's like, okay, he's going. So he calls me 10 days later from Iquitos down in Peru. And as I was sitting in my office, and his first words were like, Mom, God is real. He was bawling, heart blown wide open. I'm like, I don't even know who this kid is. And then he said, I've been healed. And that really, I became curious. I went down to Peru the first time, really suspicious. Going, I've already found my level of enlightenment. You know, I don't need anything, you know. And then I go down and I'm like, oh, okay.
Wow.
So almost 100 ayahuasca ceremonies since. Yeah, I've been journeying with that medicine for 12 years. It's really been an incredible healing ally for me. Yeah, people ask me a lot, should I go do ayahuasca? I'm like, if you're called to do it, yes. If not, no. Why would you put yourself through that, you know? But if you know, and I knew the medicine. My husband kept saying my first 35 or so journeys were just horrific, just awful. He kept going, why do you keep doing this? But each time I kept feeling a piece of myself like coming back, right? Like, oh, here's a chunk back and here's a chunk back. And I was being rebuilt. Even though I was happy in my mind, there were still pieces of me that were disjointed. And somehow with that medicine, it helped me purge out a lot of guilt and shame and unworthiness, all those things I was fighting for, right? Early in my life, fighting to avoid because money was going to fix all that. I was in the space where I got to face it. And I'm like, okay, let's go. Let's do this thing. And I still have that attitude now. Like,
do you still journey with the medicine?
It's not. I haven't journeyed. I did a journey last year, but I haven't. So I've done some other type medicines. I think psychedelics. Yes. I'm really excited about what's happening next year. I really haven't. I didn't even talk about it for so many years. It was just my experience, my journey. It was healing me. Everybody in my company mm-hmm. knew, but I wasn't public like I am now. It hadn't really come out. So, but I love what's happening because they're such, they're not party drugs. You know, it's like when you do it in a therapeutic situation or ceremonial for healing, I just don't think there's faster healing on the planet.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, ayahuasca helped. I was having issues with ovarian cyst ruptures, stopped after that, but it was a lot of emotional wounds that created it. And we brought that to the ceremony, and I was doing womb baths for about 30 days after, just setting ceremony, burning incense, and there was these herbs that I would sit in water and up in that area of my body and stopped. And I mean, I was having severe ruptures, constantly being rushed to the ER. And that first ceremony that I sat in showed some abuse in my childhood that I had suppressed and never looked at. And so when I would think about my childhood and people shared, I was always like, well, it was great. Nothing was wrong. It was all fine. But I had actually suppressed so many memories and it was exposed to me. And then you can't heal what you can't see.
Right.
And that allowed me to see those things that needed deep healing. Yeah. So it's powerful. And I actually just did, I don't know if you're familiar with San Pedro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great medicine. Yeah.
That's a beautiful one. So
it is. It's wonderful. Yeah. My son, I just did an Insta story a couple of weeks ago. My son's walking through my house and he's like, is that San Pedro? I'm laughing.
In your house?
Well, it's a normal cactus.
Yeah.
But anyway, it wasn't San Pedro, but he was like, I wouldn't put it past you. I'm like, yeah, my kids know me. but it was fun.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But I do believe, and I'm a huge advocate of all of these medicines becoming legal, because I really do believe there's a lot of people that I know that a lot of people will be healed with.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think especially for people listening, it's like, you got to feel into it first. It isn't for everybody.
No.
But if the medicine, like you said before, calls to you, it's worth exploring. But don't just go, oh, I heard it on a podcast, I should go do it. No.
Yeah.
Really feel into it, and you'll know.
I remember when it started changing down in Peru. We had been going down there as a family for about 5 years. And then I remember going, something's different. Like, I could feel that's when it started becoming kind of way more touristy. And I could tell a lot of people weren't there just for healing. It was more like, hey, I heard about this rad thing, got ayahuasca. And I'm like, oh. So that's when I stopped really going down there and started doing more private ceremonies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. And it's so key who you're working with, the intention of it. And the purity of it, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing with therapists. Like, don't just drink ayahuasca with anybody.
Exactly. Don't just work with any therapist.
No, exactly.
I've heard you also say in a lot of different interviews that energy is everything. Mm-hmm. And if we valued our energy level over anything else, we would make totally different choices. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I'm right now in one of those situations where I overrode quite a bit. And I really, it's just so new. I don't know when this is going to launch. But anyway, I overrode and I overrode and I just kept fighting instead of going, wow, this isn't easy, right? This is really difficult. So I should have really ended that relationship a long time ago, and I didn't. So while I preach this, I want you to know I'm a practitioner, okay? Like, I'm like the yoga teacher that one day has the perfect move and the next day I can't even do it. You know, it's like my body's completely off. So people have this thing like, oh, she only lives in easy world. I'm looking at a sign that says I live in easy world. It's like I do try to practice living in easy world, and I still do that. But basically, if you look at energy, if everything is a vibration, right? There's an amazing quote by Nikola Tesla. It says, if you want to understand the universe, look at it in terms of frequency and energy, right? So Dr. Bruce Lipton told me, I said, I have this concept, ideas are alive. And he said, why do you say that? And I said, I feel like the alive ideas within me seem to work out, and the ones that don't work out. And he said, well, everything is an energetic vibration, and every living thing is looking and seeking more life force energy.
Yes.
When he told me that, I was like, oh my gosh, like that's it. And then he explained resonance and dissonance. And resonance is when you put two energy waves together that are exactly the same, right? So they're both just going like this together, same wavelength, same height. Those two together create more energy together than they do apart. So they create more than they even did not together. Okay, this is what we call collaboration. Resonant collaboration is when magic can happen because you have more energy than you did alone. So dissonance is the opposite. That's when the energy waves just aren't matching, right? It's like noise canceling headphones. They cancel each other out. And those energy waves actually have less energy together than they did apart. So when you hear things like, this job is killing me, this relationship is draining me, this relationship is killing me, I would argue it actually is. Because what it's doing is literally draining your life force energy. That impulse for you to have more life force energy is being interrupted. What's it interrupted by? Programming, societal pressures, cultural pressures, thinking we should be the good girl, we've got to do it right, right? Yep. So we push down what everything within our evolutionary, you know, evolution points us towards, that idea or that direction, because it knows that we will be more doing that than we are right now. And even as an evolutionary process, we all just need to keep growing.
Yes.
That's how we do turn over. So I'm a huge proponent is, if energy were your most valuable resource, what decisions would you make? If that were what you considered currency, where I used to consider money currency, if I considered energy currency, what decisions would I make and how would I do that in my day? You know? Yeah. What relationships would I be in? What work would I be in? Where would I live? You know, and those are sometimes some big moves.
Yeah. And even what thoughts would I let hang out in my mind? Which ones do I need to let go of?
Yeah, totally.
Because it all affects our energy. How do you stay in the highest vibration or keep your energy up? I know that it's based off of certain decisions that you make, but for you personally, do you have a practice to cultivate your energy?
No, daily? I believe that we all naturally have energy. You know, if you look at a baby, it pretty much naturally has its own energy. You know, it's going to tell you, "Wah, you know, I'm not happy. Wah, I need food." Okay. we forget about those impulses, you know, so we override, and then that's when our energy starts draining. So the way I've discovered, what my mentors have taught me, to keep my energy intact, I just keep moving towards what turns me on. And I mostly drop the things that are dragging me down. When I know I am drained of energy, I start reevaluating that. Should that even be in my life? If it's a person, place, or thing, what do I need to do to create less of that, to drop that shit, and then focus on the shit that really turns me on?
That's right.
More. Yeah.
Yeah. And how can people connect with what turns them on more? How do they know? And I know for you, like, it's so visceral for you, right? You like it throughout your whole body, gooseies, all the things. How would other people, if they have been doing life as they've been told to do, or how they've been programmed, and now they're breaking out of it and going, okay, I need to start to connect with what has me, what turns me on. How would they even know the first step or how that feels?
Yeah, I think that what they would do is they would, first of all, start noticing body sensations. You know, the easiest one is that thump in your belly, like, oh, you know, or notice when you feel drained, like really just start paying attention, like, and why do you feel drained? Have you overrode some feeling, or is it really been that person is just bitched and bitched and bitched and bitched and bitched all night at dinner, and you want to go shut the F up, but you don't, right? Like, I don't want to hear this anymore. So you sit there shoving in food and drinking, thinking I'm going to put up with this instead of really going, you know what? Like, I don't want to do this. This doesn't feel good to me. Can we have a positive conversation here? And if that person won't, then you don't go to dinner with them anymore, right? But really start noticing yourself after an interaction with someone. Do I feel better after this interaction or do I feel worse? And if you feel worse, like start paying attention to that and then start moving away from that. If you can have communication, like, hey, I notice when we're together, we get into this drama cycle and I'm not into that anymore, right? And you give the person the potential, because they could be stuck in a negative pattern. It's not your job to fix it, but you could always toss if it's a really good friend, like, hey, I'm in a drama-free diet here. You know, like that's what I'm doing. And so I'd love to go to dinner. I'd love to check in and see how you're doing without the drama. You know what I'm saying? Tell me about the good stuff that's going on in your life. Tell me about the positive things. And then some relationships you can shift and some you can't. So you just say no. With your job, you could actually go and have communication. Like, this project doesn't turn me on. You know, is there something I can really feel more fulfilled? Here's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in creativity and inspiration. I had this idea for the company. Are you open to hearing it? And if the company doesn't want to play with you at the level you want to, then you might need to find a new job. But it really first comes back to paying attention to your energy level. And going, if this were my bank account, am I rich?
Ooh, that's so good, Susie. That is so good because most people are broke in their internal bank account.
Yeah.
Because we are selling out or doing the things because we think we have to or need to or should. Yes. Shooting on yourself all day long, like, totally puts you in the negative in terms of your own internal bank account. Yeah. And putting up with things, tolerating things that we really don't need to.
Yeah.
And not doing what fulfills us. So I love how Poopery came into existence. And I know you touched on it earlier, but how did that start?
Yeah. So basically, like I said, I wasn't interested in business anymore at all. Mm-hmm. And I was just happy, you know, listening to Gangaji and crying all day, like, oh, this life's amazing. And I was at a family dinner party and my brother-in-law said, could bathroom odor be trapped? And I'm like, I felt the zing up my arm and like everything went in high def. And I immediately go, I can do that. And he goes, what do you mean? And I said, I can make that. Like, I know it. I work with essential oils. It was my hobby. Like, I just saw oil floats on water. Like, I got this, right?
Wow.
And so it took me 9 months to formulate it because I'm not a chemist and there's some science behind it that I had to learn. But I was literally, what I can tell you the difference from the past is when I was doing something to get somewhere with this, I wasn't trying to get anywhere other than, and I was really being pulled towards this idea rather than me pushing the idea, making it happen. I couldn't stop it. An idea would come through. I'd be like, oh my gosh, I'd start researching. I'd order stuff in, you know, and mixing. So it was like this incredible co-creative relationship with this idea. And then 9 months later, you know, my husband walked out of the bathroom and goes, oh my God, we're going to be millionaires. And I'm like, what do you mean? He said, do you realize what you've done? You've taken the smell out of shit. And I was like, what? Those were his exact
words. That's disrupting right there. You're like, I'm a disruptor.
Exactly, like the OG. And so after that, I just built a fast little website, bought 1,000 bottles, which I thought was just, oh my God, how am I ever going to sell these? But then I thought, well, I'll just sell them out of the trunk of my car. I've done that before. You know, I used to make money doing garage sales, you know, trying to pick up stuff on the side of the road and paint it and buy old computers and resell it. So I was like, I can do that. And so the rest is history. I think we've sold over 65 million bottles now.
Wow.
I know. It's fun.
That's a lot of saved relationships.
A lot of saved relationships.
A lot of saved people saved from feeling shameful or embarrassed.
Embarrassed. Yes, you can go. We really transform shit. You know, that's what we say. We transform shit. You know, that's very liberating, you know. So just walk out of the bathroom with confidence and be like, yeah, that was me.
Yeah.
I do smell like lemons.
I do smell like lemons. I love that you were pursuing something from your heart and also you weren't attached to the outcome. Like, oh, we're going to make a lot of money. You're just so following the resonance and doing what had you feel so alive. And I think that, again, if what you said before, if that failed, at least you had a heck of a lot of fun creating it, right?
Yeah. Oh, I've had the time of my life. I've grown as a person. I've grown as a being. Did I do it all right? Hell no. You know, was it sloppy and messy? Yes. You know, it still is sometimes, but that's human. You know, I definitely live life full out and I take a lot of risk. So I'm not going to lay my head down or at the end of my life with my last breath thinking I didn't go for it, because I've gone for it. Yes. And it's not always made people happy. And I'm okay with that. Like, that's where I can go like, well, okay, I tried. Maybe it didn't work. Maybe it, you know, was messy, but I did it.
Yeah. How has this grown you? Building Poopery?
Really, I look at every business problem as what's going on internally inside me. Like, oh, how interesting. You know, if we're having cash flow issues, it's like, where do I not feel abundant? You know, so I really go inside. I went through three or four COOs, and I started going in doing EMDR work on support. And I realized one of my first memories was cooking for my parents, like at 4 years old. So I had this story that I can't be supported, right? So why? So when I'm hiring COOs, what lens am I looking through? I am looking through that lens of, oh, you're going to be perfect. You're not going to support me. This is going to work great.
Yes. To
fulfill this story, right?
Yep.
So after I started doing that, now I have Boyd. And Boyd is, so I went in, did EMDR, reprogrammed my brain, you know, did my psychedelic medicines, was just like, okay, you know, I feel the support of the universe and the world. And now I have Boyd, who is the most epic, supportive human on the planet. That's our VP of operations. Like, everybody needs a Boyd. He's incredible. Don't recruit him. He wouldn't leave, but he's amazing.
That's amazing to hear. The reason why I went like this was because I'm like, that was my story for the longest time too. And I kept hiring people who would be great at the start and then they would ghost or things would happen. And like, then I would get to be right about, that's why I should just do it myself.
Yes.
Because I can't count on people. They're not here. And I know that's not true because I see other people being supported very well. And I, same, just like you, had to go in, reprogram that.
Yes. Yeah, because it's just a program.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Your outer world is a reflection of your programming or your inner world. That
100%.
Is it.
100%. And business has no difference in my experience. Mm-hmm. Whatever is happening out there is happening in here.
Yeah.
So when I can keep this clear and clean, this ends up being clear and clean.
That's right.
Yeah.
If, let's say people want to uncover what has them come alive. I know that you're saying like follow the resonance each day, but people also want to figure out like, what do I actually want to devote my life to doing, right? In this moment, because I'm sure it can always change. But how do you create it? Do you just wait for the aliveness to come? Or how do you open yourself up for the ideas to flow in?
Yeah, I think scratch my head with that one. I think we're too focused on purpose, passion, mission, you know. I remember Byron Katie saying, what if your purpose was right here in this moment? What if that was it?
Yeah.
You know, so it takes a lot of pressure off. But what I would do is stop being wrapped up in this concept that you're not living your purpose and wonder if you are living your purpose. And my experience is the more I focus on this is what I'm doing in this moment, I will be fully here, I will be fully present, my purpose has been shown to me over time. Like, you would think it was poopery and I'm an entrepreneur, but that's not it at all, right? Like, I am here to tell people that anything is possible and that you can transform shit and that energy is your greatest currency. I would have never seen that 12 years ago when I started poopery, but I just was following an alive idea, not knowing why, not too focused on my purpose or mission, but just going, this feels right. And then my experience is your purpose or mission or whatever will unfold. You don't have to go find it. And then you're just like, ah, you know, and then you can start aligning with that once it becomes aware to you.
Yeah. I want to highlight something that I am hearing of how you live life is just from so much more ease. And again, the feeling of aliveness. And I believe, because this is a shift I've had to make, and I see so many people where we think in order to create, we have to hustle and force and push, make it happen, drive, wake up at 4 a.m., you'll sleep when you're dead, like that mentality in order to feel successful or be, instead of just do what has you feel alive and trust that it gets to be easy as well. That's something I've been leaning into so much, is like, why can't things actually just be easy? It can still be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a book called Choosing Easy World. It's by Joya something Hamrick or something like that. I don't know if it's in print. I know you can buy it on Amazon, but Gay Hendricks taught me this commitment. Like, I commit to easy world where everything's easy.
Yes.
And that's one of my main commitments, is I commit. When I was getting my divorce, I said, how do I choose a divorce attorney? He said, look them in the eyes and ask them, can this be easy? And the one you believe, choose that one. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so great. Who's the biggest, baddest, most strategizing attorney ever. Like, choose the one that's easiest, you know? And it's like, yeah. And I went to three. The first two were like, and I'm like, oh, this doesn't sound easy. The third one, he goes, it's so easy, you don't even need me. I said, well, tell me about that. He taught me about collaborative law. And that's what my ex-husband and I did. I was like, there you go. Thank you. So it can be easy, but we are programmed. That's another program for struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So because our brains are programmed for fear and survival, we're not programmed for abundance, love, joy, and ease, right?
And that's actually really how life is meant to be.
Yeah.
You know, I love in A Course in Miracles when they say, like, an acorn knows to turn into an oak tree, an embryo knows to become a baby. There is a process in a divine order. It is easy. They're not forcing and pushing, right?
Oh.
And that's how life can be. And the only thing that gets in the way of this ease is fear, ego, programming, etc. So it's like, start to clear that and know that there is a divine order in your life if you also allow it instead of trying to force it, push it, find it. And I actually really love that you said, you're like, stop trying to feel like you need to find your purpose. And I think just let it be, because that – you actually just caught me in my own programming right there. So I really loved it.
Yeah.
You said that. So good. What do you do, or how do you ensure that you continue to grow and evolve each day?
Well, knowing that, just really my commitment to reaching my highest evolution this lifetime. And if something comes up on my path, like a situation, drama, incident, I really try to practice going inside and going, how did I create this? What is there for me to learn here? Really to be, I guess the short answer would be to live in a state of curiosity and wonder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, I'm curious. How did I create this? I'm curious. How am I involved in this? What's going on here? And not to perpetuate that out into the world anymore. But to really face it.
Yeah. And I would also even say the curiosity of how the magic has also shown up, because it's always fun to dissect that too. Like, how did I grow and evolve to the point that now look at everything that I'm attracting with so much ease? That's what I've been doing lately, because, I think I'm always looking to what needs to be fixed versus what do I also get to celebrate, because that's a new thing for me as well.
Yes. Great. Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Thanks. So I have a few more questions just to close this out, Susie. What's something unique about you that most people don't know?
What's unique? I think probably everything's a lot unique, is that I really do live and practice. So the most thing people say is you walk your talk. At least I try to.
Yep.
So you don't really get one version of me and then you get another. Like, it's truly, I think what's unique is I have a commitment to transformation and I believe in it wholeheartedly. And I don't think a lot of people believe in that or focus their life on it. Mm-hmm. And I have.
Yeah. I even see how you're doing it inside of your business each and every day. Mm-hmm. It's not about the business that you're about. It's about how do I transform so that the business reflects my growth. Yeah.
Yes.
So cool. When you're in a dark place, what's your go-to to get out?
You know, I usually call my mentor. It depends. You know how you have your friends at a wine with you? So sometimes I'll call one of them and then when I really want to get out, I'll call Gay, my mentor.
Yeah.
Because I know he'll bring me, help remind me of who I am and what, that this is all just energy and to love it. So that's, I know he'll ask me, the main question he always asks me is, can you find that within yourself and can you love it? It's like, oh, okay. Can I love even that? So that usually will help me get out of a dense state into something more open. Go, oh, can I just love that part of myself? I can be like, that person has me. And then he'll be like, can you find that in yourself? I'm like, oh, and can you love it? Yes, I can.
Thanks, Gay.
Yeah, thanks, Gay. And he'll just say, you know, are you committed to living in the easy world? And I'll be like, yes, okay, I forgot. So yeah. He's my person that really can help because I know he operates just on that level. So I will call him.
Yeah, he's special. I love his books. I've read them. And knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 10-year-old self?
Oh man, your energy is everything. Pay attention. It's your greatest ally. It's your superpowers. Mm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Believe it. Yeah.
Yes.
Believe those energies. They don't lie.
They do not lie.
They do not lie.
When you feel it in your body, when you're around someone or something, you're like, ooh, go the other direction.
Exactly.
Yeah. And lean into where it feels good. Susie, thank you so much for your time, for your energy, for your wisdom, and for your realness. I just love how you are a straight shooter. You say it like it is. And I appreciate the massive light that you are shining on this planet by sharing your story and everything that you've learned along the way. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you.
Where can people connect with you?
Oh, so Instagram, Susie Batiz, just one word all together, and SusieBatiz.com. I have a new newsletter. Yes. And the middle of June, yeah, there's going to be a really fun little thing about how to determine resonance in your body. And ooh. So it'll be interactive. So you can go on and sign up for my newsletter now and we'll start talking.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you, dear. I appreciate it.
Wow, Susie is such a powerful force of light, inspiration, and empowerment. And her rise is extraordinarily powerful and such a reminder to do you. Do you, do what has you come alive, and know that you are so supported and anything is absolutely possible for you. And you can do it with so much ease. Like, that's been my biggest motto, you guys heard, is to do things, everything gets to be easy. It doesn't have to be hard. It really doesn't. It's only us that makes things hard. And that forcing and pushing to create, it just doesn't work. And neither does tolerating the things that you don't need or focusing on your fears. And also, as you heard today, it's really important to dive deep within, just like Susie did, to heal, to transform, and to awaken within you what has you come alive to create a life that's fulfilling for you on your terms. Now, as we're closing this out, I just wanted to remind you guys about my upcoming 90-day live coaching mastermind called Become for High Achievers and Entrepreneurs that'll help you to uncover, reprogram, and upgrade your subconscious beliefs to help you to get unstuck, to ditch that self-doubt, and to feel confident so that you can increase your impact and make more money. Again, if you're a high achiever or you're an entrepreneur and you're ready to get out of your own way to finally up-level your success and to have the results that you want, then this is for you. And for all the details of this program, you can check them out at stephaniekwong.com/mastermind to get all the info that you need. And I'll be sure to link that up in the show notes for you guys too. I mean, it'd be an absolute honor to support you even deeper, to upgrade your beliefs, to create an abundance mindset, and to support you in taking action so that you can create a greater impact in your work and on your bottom line. All right. So thank you guys so much for listening. And if you're the kind of person who likes to help others, then make sure you share this episode out with your friends and family, because if you got value, they will too. And if you want to connect with Susie and for all of the resources mentioned in today's episode, you can get all of that info in the show notes. And that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP58. And of course, you can feel free to check out all of my other podcast episodes there too. Okay, my loves, until next time, I'm sending you so much love.